How do you do? Jen and Cam feel it would be unkind to present this program without a friendly word of warning. We are about to unfold our true crime podcast, a podcast of lifelong friends who seek to examine crimes which were committed without reckoning upon God. The discussion will be frank, and the subject matter will be of a grim and violent nature. I think it will thrill you. It might even horrify you. So, if there are young children listening, or if you feel unwilling to subject your nerves to such a strain, now is your chance to... Well, we've warned you.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam. How are you?
Oh, you know, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great. you know.
Right.
Yeah. Living the dream each and every day.
I know.
Uh-huh.
Nothing says quality time with people you love than this. That's all I gotta say about
exactly.
that.
Uh-huh. Right. Exactly. But the most exciting thing that's happened to us is we are now on the app Get Vocal.
Woo-hoo!
Or the website getvocal.com, GETVOKL.com. We go live every Thursday night at 7 p.m. Central. And we did it the first time on Thursday, and it was a lot of fun. And of course, we had no idea what it was doing because it's kind of our brand, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think as we go along, it's going to get a little bit more organized and we'll fall into a groove like we normally do. But everybody should check us out. It's a lot of fun. G-E-T.
Get Vocal. Yeah.
V-O-K-L.com. And we will probably talk about last week's case this Thursday. You guys can come on in and ask us questions if you want, or just ask us any kind of questions. We don't know.
Yeah, it's really just kind of like a 1 hour to chat and ask questions or
talk
get to know us better, get to know you better, you know.
Talk about true crime is what we are supposed to do.
And we're gonna.
We're gonna.
I love that.
So anyway, it's a lot of fun. Please join us. At least check us out. So anyway, besides that, what do you have for us today?
Okay, Jen. So as you know, I don't know if anybody else knows, but I teach a high school murder, mystery, and crime class that I pitched to the powers that be last year, and it went over like gangbusters. But anyway, I took a bunch of these kids to the Missouri State Penitentiary. And when we were up there, our tour guide mentioned this case. And I knew this case, as do you, I'm sure, but I kind of forgot about it, just like all the details and stuff. So I kind of was like, one day, because right now, bored. Don't have anything else to do. Start Googling stuff because that's what I do. I was just like, ooh, horrified. So this is our case. You ready?
Awesome. Yeah. Let's do it.
So today's case takes us back to our home state, good old Missouri, near our state capital, Jefferson City, to a town, I guess it's a suburb of Jefferson City, by the name of St. Martin's. Hi, Corey. Say hi, Corey. He lives up there.
Oh, hi, Corey. That's right.
See? St. Martin's is located in Cole County near the state capital of Jefferson City. The population is a bit over 1,100 people, and it sits almost smack dab in the middle of the state. The area is a typical small town America where everybody knows everyone. Neighbor kids play together all the time. It's exactly where we grew up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's where this is going to be a little something for you. You ready?
Uh-huh.
So, on October 21st, that's your birthday, Jen. That's
I know I
said
it's
that.
My birthday.
Okay, well, you didn't say anything. Okay.
No,
so, on October,
going on.
So, on October 21st, 2009, the doorbell rang as one of the moms, she was making dinner. You know, it's during the week. She's baking dinner for her three little ones. And, you know, it was one of the neighbor kids coming to want to know if they could squeeze in some playtime before dinner, bath, and a bedtime. So the little visitor is a six-year-old neighbor girl by the name of Emma, and she lived nearby, and she just wanted to know if nine-year-old Elizabeth Olton could come out and play. Now, Elizabeth is the youngest of Patty Price's kids. Patty's, you know, making dinner, getting ready for the night. Now, at first, Patty was like, no, you're not going to go out because, you know, it's a school night. But we know little kids, right? Especially little girls. She wore her down. And finally, Patty said, okay, but you need to be home by 6 o'clock for dinner. The girls squeal with delight. They're so happy. So they take off through the woods that connected their two houses.
Right.
So 6 p.m. comes and, you know, little Elizabeth, she's only 9, right? So she's not that teenager that's trying to defy parents, right? She would always be at home when she was supposed to.
Right.
So when 6 p.m. comes and it goes and Elizabeth doesn't arrive home, her mom starts to get a little worried. She knows that little Elizabeth is very scared of the dark, especially because you have to travel through the woods that connected the two homes, and she'd never wait until after dark to come home. So Patty, you know, makes a phone call to the neighbor's house to see what time Elizabeth left their house. It's about 6:30 at this time. Patty is shocked to hear that the grandmother, who cares for little six-year-old Emma, tells Patty that Elizabeth was never actually in their house.
Hmm.
So Patty immediately calls police, knowing something's not right. She also tries calling Elizabeth's cell phone, and it just rings and goes straight to voicemail. Now, again, this is not typical of a child at this age not to answer her mom's phone call. She's not that, you know, mad teenager. The Cole County Sheriff's Department are fast to arrive at her house quickly, and they want to retrace Elizabeth's steps from the neighbor's house to her house. Now, at this point, you know, they're kind of just thinking she simply got lost in the woods and, you know, lost track of time. They head over to the neighbor's house, and where it is confirmed that Elizabeth did actually never show up there. News spreads quickly. Volunteers rush to the scene, anxious to offer their help and search for the missing child. They begin a grid search through the woods, but darkness, this is October in Missouri, you know how it is, late October. Darkness is making it way difficult, and the October nights in Missouri can also be a little bit chilly. At this point, there's no reason to believe anything other than maybe little Elizabeth got lost. Authorities call the cell phone company, and they request to get information about where the cell phone signals are pinging from the cell tower near the woods. And they're told that the phone is, in fact, right there. It's pinging from those woods. There's a nearby cell tower, and that's where they're showing it is. At this point, they're kind of realizing that she wasn't taken, that she is in those woods. A missing persons report is filed, and it's sent to all the neighboring police agencies, as well as the FBI. It is an all hands on deck at this point. Neighbors, friends, lots of people come out. They're going to search for her. They're positive she's right there. I mean, this is small town, right?
Right. They're hopeful.
As time is ticking away, the next day, police, they decide they got to redo this. You know, this is not working. They're going to have to go back to the starting line, I guess, if you will. And they decide they need to go interview little Emma, six-year-old Emma, the child that Elizabeth was supposed to be playing with that night. Now, Emma lives with her grandmother, Karen Brooke, as well as her twin brothers and 15-year-old half-sister, Alyssa. Now, the kids, they didn't have an easy life to start with, but now their grandmother was trying to give them a better life, and we'll get into that a little bit later. Police reach the house, and they talk to Emma, who tells police that she and Elizabeth did play together, but outside of her home. They never went inside. While they were playing, Emma states that she hurt herself and she yelled out for her older sister, Alyssa, to come and help her. Emma said that Alyssa came out to help her, and about this time, she had fallen in a bush or whatever. So about this time, after all of this was going on, and she's six, I'm sure she was crying and upset.
Six-year-old little girl, if you get a scratch, it's the end of the world.
Exactly.
You're screaming.
Very high maintenance.
Yeah.
Totally fine. So when all this kind of came about, it's time for Elizabeth to go home. So she left and walked home. Police now decide that they need to speak to all of the members of the house while the woods right behind the house are at the same time being searched, okay? So at this point, police are working with the idea that Elizabeth may have been abducted. They at first thought she was lost, but she, you know, time's ticking away. She hasn't been found. So they're believing at this point that maybe while she was walking home, she was abducted. Volunteers are continuing to look for any sign of Elizabeth while police are canvassing the neighborhood. Elizabeth's cell phone had now quit pinging as it ran out of battery. This is approaching the next day mark, right? As officials are combing the woods, they come across something strange. It's a small hole in the ground. Definitely someone dug a hole, and it wasn't like a small hole. It wasn't from an animal, but it was definitely something that a person had created, okay? Very peculiar, and, you know, maybe it was connected, maybe it wasn't, but time would tell. Since Emma had said that Alyssa came out to help her when she was hurt, they know that they have to talk to her. So during the day that Elizabeth disappeared, Alyssa had admitted to officers that she decided to take the day off and skip school. Woo woo! We can relate to that. And even though she knew Elizabeth, and she knew that Elizabeth was there with Emma playing, she had no idea what happened after Elizabeth left for home. Alyssa was very forthcoming with officers and didn't seem to be hiding anything. She's very calm, collected, very confident for a 15-year-old, right? The FBI was granted permission to search the home of Emma and her family, as well as Alyssa's room. Now, Alyssa's a teenager, and you and I, other people out there, well, we know very well how much teenagers are trying to figure out who they are, what kind of person they want to be. They're trying to fit in. One day they're a preppy, one day they're goth. You know what I'm saying, right?
Right.
Like, that's pretty normal. So Alyssa's room is decorated with lots of artwork. However, some of it's a little bit chilling, to say the least. There was a poem about cutting, as in self-harm, suicide-like art, very dark in color and theme. But, you know, that's, if you're an artist, you know, they're moody, whatever, and we all know teenagers are moody, right? Mm-hmm. There was even a painting of a figure in which the head was separated from the body as if it was beheaded. Scrawled at the bottom of the art was a name, Emma, and that is Alyssa's little sister. Now, I would say this is kind of a room that any goth teenager, especially in 2009, would have. That was very big at the time. Lots of black eyeliner, black hair. You know, we talked about the black hair and it straightened out. You and I talked about that in the black eyeliner, and we're like, they're such pretty girls. Why did they wear so much black eyeliner on top and bottom, right?
Scrunches your eyes, yep.
Really, from just looking at that, it's not that alarming if you know teenagers and all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there was something that was very alarming. The FBI agent that was searching her room stumbled upon a diary which had some ominous writings in them. There were entries talking about killing people and how it would feel, setting fire to a house and killing people inside of it. All of this is very disturbing, but there was even a diary entry on October 21st, the day Elizabeth disappeared. The entry, and we're going to put this on the blog because I already sent it to you. You saw it.
I did.
It's scratched out by like a blue and black pen, right? So, you know, kids, I looked at this and I thought, you know, little kids that go, boo, I see you. And they cover their eyes and they think because their eyes are covered, you can't see them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought about this. So she had taken a black blue pen and like scratched it out, but you could kind of see the stuff written in it anyway. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The entry had been pretty well scratched out, but there was the last part of it was left. And that was clear. She left that be. And it said, quote, now I've got to go to church. LOL. So, right? Bizarre. Okay. She's a teenager. Lots of evidence was collected from Alyssa's room. Now things are going to start to get really weird. After the search, the FBI agent took Alyssa into the woods. After talking to her in her room and seeing all this, I think just trying to gauge like how she would act being in the woods, right?
Mm-hmm.
More specifically, they took her to that freshly dug hole. And, you know, she did not disappoint. When asked about the hole, Alyssa admitted that, yeah, she dug it because she likes digging holes. And, you know, she liked to put animals that she found that were dead animals on the road or wherever. She liked to put them in there.
Community service, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Now, maybe she's being sweet as, you know, she wanted to bury these babies. However, I know a lot of 15-year-old girls, and I don't think they'd touch a dead animal, much less transport it to another location to bury it. Maybe I'm wrong.
Very few, I believe, would do that, you know.
Just don't think it's a thing. Maybe I'm wrong. It is now Friday, 48 hours after Elizabeth, went missing, and there's still no answers. It's become apparent that investigators need more information from Alyssa, one of the last to see Elizabeth alive that evening. Alyssa, her grandmother, a juvenile officer, and Sergeant Rice, who was investigating, they were all asked to come in to an interrogation room where Alyssa would be interviewed by FBI agent David Rice. Now, this is only 48 hours later, right?
Mm-hmm.
She disappeared around 6 o'clock, 6:30 on Wednesday. This is now Friday. Officers begin the interview, and they're sort of friendly. They're nice. They know she's only 15. The officers can see the stress on her. She's fidgety. Her eyes won't look directly at them. She's playing with her hands. All the signs that let you know that a person they're talking to either knows more than she is saying, or she's young and just immature, right? Mm-hmm. My kid would totally act like that. Nervous.
Oh.
That's all. Just nervous, fidgety, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
At first, Alyssa is holding strong, but they know that they're getting close to breaking her. They're really laying in there. They're kind of just, you know, putting that little trap out there. So they tell her. They tell her that they have her diary.
Mm.
And not only do they have that, they were able to backlight it, and they actually can see what she wrote before scratching it out. Two of the most prominent words that popped out were throat and slit. They had her, and she knew it. She broke down. But as we all know, it takes a bit for the truth to actually and fully come out. Alyssa tells officers that it was all an accident. Elizabeth fell. She hit her head when they're walking home. Alyssa was nice enough to walk Elizabeth home, and she fell, and Alyssa panicked. Now, officers say, oh, yeah? Is that right? Well, you do know that Elizabeth is going to have an autopsy, and we're going to know exactly how she died. You get that, right? Then looking right at her, Sergeant Rice, point blank, asked Alyssa, was Elizabeth's throat cut? Alyssa bows her head and says yes. Knowing they knew, and Alyssa did it, her grandmother was devastated and was escorted from the room. And then Alyssa would tell them exactly what happened that evening. Alyssa tells officers that she had sent her sister over to get Elizabeth that day and bring her to her. Then Alyssa sent Emma, her little sister, home. Alyssa then took Elizabeth in the woods and told her that she had something really cool to show her. Elizabeth, of course, followed Alyssa through those woods, anxious to see what a teenage girl had to show her, just as any 9-year-old would. Now, I was thinking about this. As a 9-year-old and you have a 15-year-old girl paying attention to you, you would be ecstatic, right?
Oh, you would follow them to the ends of the earth. You really would.
You're so excited. Like, you're a cool kid. I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alyssa would lead her to a hole that she had dug earlier, a hole that would become little Elizabeth's grave. Once they reached the hole, Alyssa began to strangle the little girl and then took out a knife that she had been hiding and stabbed Elizabeth in the chest several times before cutting the little girl's throat. With a full confession, Alyssa takes officers to the site where Elizabeth lost her life. The dirt barely covered the little girl. It was now so obvious to people that were looking so desperately for little Elizabeth where she had been. They saw some disturbed dirt, but let's be honest, nobody thinks that. Am I right?
That's the last thing I think.
Officials start to build a case against a little girl who savagely, brutally murdered another little girl. I mean, this is unheard of. 15 and 9? No one suspected that the killer was a member of the community, much less a teenage girl. I mean, it's shocking, right?
Right.
My daughter's 15. She won't kill a ladybug. She won't kill a spider.
Well, because she's, I hate to say the word normal, but.
Just wait. Yeah. Details began to emerge, and they were even more horrific than anyone could imagine. It all started several days before October 21st, when Alyssa decided to stay home from school Now, this was the Friday before, but she had devious plans, unlike another 15-year-old that would stay home and want to watch movies and eat Cheerios and ice cream all day, right? Alyssa decided that she wanted to know what it felt like to kill someone. She had spent her day off from school digging two, not one, two large holes, two graves. She was ready and only needed a victim, and that victim would come just days later. But until then, Alyssa went on living her life, hanging out with friends, going to school. She was just waiting, waiting until she had a victim. As I said, Alyssa didn't have the best upbringing. Alyssa would start living with her grandparents at age 7, and her grandparents would eventually get guardianship of Alyssa and her siblings. Alyssa's mother was a teenager when she had her. She had a pretty big, bad drug problem, and she would often pop in and out of Alyssa's life as well as jail, to be frank. Her father was serving a 10-year sentence in prison for an assault charge. Now, Jen, there's always signs. We say that. How many times do we say that? There's signs. There's always signs, right?
Everywhere a sign. Blocking up scenery.
Alyssa had begun struggling with mental health at a very young age. She had attempted suicide, and she had scars on her arms due to self-cutting. She had been on medicine in the hopes of helping her psychological state, and she'd received inpatient as well as outpatient care. Now, Alyssa not only hurt herself, but she seemed to like hurting others as well, or so she claimed. On her social media pages, and at this point, back then it was, Facebook wasn't as big, but it was MySpace, remember MySpace and Twitter?
I do remember MySpace. Mm-hmm.
On her social media pages, she listed her hobbies as cutting and killing people.
Oh, nice. That's awesome.
Now, there's also, a somewhat telling video of Alyssa with her little brothers. She took them to, it was a farm. It was out there. I mean, this is in the middle of Missouri. Corey can attest to this, right? It's where we are, too. I mean, there's lots of farmland. And Alyssa talks her little brothers into touching an electric fence. Now, she is laughing with delight, and she even wrote about the clip, you know, that she had posted on YouTube or on her social media sites. This is where it gets good. This is where my brothers get hurt. I get that, like kids do. I could see that my sisters would do something like that to me, too. But it's
I was going to go back to say, it doesn't seem like it has anything to do with her upbringing. It seems like she just might be a psychopath.
Ian, thank you. We're going to get to that.
Okay.
Later on, it was a friend of Alyssa's. Her name's Jennifer Meyer. Maybe you know her. Just kidding.
Oh, because all of us Jennifers know each other? Is that what you're trying to get at?
Yeah, I do. You know. She would tell authorities that Alyssa had confessed to her, quote, I just wonder what it would be like to kill someone, to see the life just drain out of someone. I wonder what it would feel like, that type of power, to take that away from someone. I gotta be honest, I'm 35 years old-ish. I've never thought that. I have never thought that. I'm the opposite. Let the spider live. It's not gonna hurt you. It's fine. Let it go on its life. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I feel like things are gonna get me later if I did something bad like that.
You mean karma?
Kill the spider. Sadly, and almost, I guess, freakishly, the autopsy would come back and it would match those blacked out lines that Alyssa had tried to cover up in her diary by scratching them out. The entry in her diary was marked October 21st, the very day that Elizabeth lost her life. You ready? It's pretty shocking. It's got a cuss word in it. I'm going to say it because I'm a big girl. I just fucking killed someone. I strangled them and I slit their throat and stabbed them. It was amazing. And that is spelled wrong with an H in it, by the way.
Oh.
As soon as you get over the, oh my God, I can't do this feeling, it's pretty enjoyable. I'm kind of nervous and shaky though right now. K, and that's K-A-Y, comma, I got to go to church now, LOL. She's 15. Who does that?
Well, you can tell she's 15.
K?
Well.
LOL? Mm-hmm. It was never quite clear why Alyssa dug two graves. She never really came forth with that information, basically, is what it boils down to. But investigators speculate that perhaps Alyssa had initially planned to murder both her little brothers.
Right.
That's why there was two. Now, Alyssa was presented with this opportunity to snatch Elizabeth. And thankfully, she was caught after Elizabeth, which was awful. But the other thought was that perhaps she, too, was perhaps that she might have had yet another person in mind and was caught before she could commit that second murder. Alyssa never divulged the reason for the two graves, but those two graves were dug on that Friday before when she skipped school, right? And
right.
Elizabeth's life was taken on Wednesday. Alyssa was arrested and charged with first-degree murder in the death of Elizabeth Olton. But there were a few things that needed to be addressed. Alyssa was only 15 years old at the time, but clearly the murder was very brutal. Should she be tried as an adult or a juvenile? There's no arguing that this was definitely premeditated and sickly planned, as, you know, she took those days off on Friday, dug graves. Maybe Elizabeth wasn't the very first intended victim, but she did have this in her mind.
She was planning on killing someone or some people, plural.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So Missouri is, as you know, Jen, a death penalty state. And this case does meet the requirements to receive the death penalty, .. if you're charged as an adult.
Right.
So Missouri is one of the states that use the dual jurisdiction system. Part of the thing that I found said 22 states, but I think that was a little old information. And then I tried to figure out how many did it, and I got sidetracked because it's what I do. But under this, when a youth reaches the age of 17, there's a mandatory hearing to decide a couple things. Number one, will they be transferred to the Department of Corrections, where they will go on and serve their punishment as an adult? Are they, two, going to be placed on probation, meaning like they've served their time as a juvenile offender and they're going to be let go? Or will they remain in the custody of the Division of Youth Services until the age of 21, in which another hearing will come about to determine if the offender has been rehabilitated or if they should serve the rest of their sentence as an adult, meaning report to the Department of Corrections. In other words, this is a blended sentencing option in which a juvenile and adult sentence is imposed at the same time, with the execution of the adult sentence suspended until the age of 21. Meaning like you could get, say, 20 years, but at 21, you could have a hearing and be let go. Like things could change, right?
Right.
Her attorneys, obviously, wanted her to stand trial as a juvenile, while the state of Missouri, obviously, wanted her to face trial as an adult. The punishment would be much more severe, including that she could face the death penalty. So on November 17th, 2009, Alyssa appeared in a court where the judge determined she would, in fact, stand trial as an adult. She entered a plea of not guilty. After she entered her plea and reported back to jail, Alyssa, she wasn't doing too well. You know, I'd said earlier she had some mental issues, and she was put on suicide watch. She was very depressed. In fact, she started clawing herself with her nails. They had to go in and cut her nails really, really short, like every other day. Her lawyer would file a motion asking that she be sent to a psychiatric institution to undergo evaluation and receive immediate psychiatric treatment. In January 2012, Alyssa Bustamante was supposed to stand trial charged as an adult with the first-degree murder of 9-year-old Elizabeth Olton. Unfortunately for the prosecution, the defense filed a motion to suppress Alyssa's confession. The defense team claimed that Alyssa was asked some questions during her interrogation that should have not been allowed. And since Alyssa was just a juvenile at that time at 15, the judge agreed and threw out her confession. But that was not the only hurdle the prosecution needed to hop over. Now, this goes back to the part that I said I love, because I love this stuff and I should have been a lawyer. In 2012, it was coming down the pipeline that something very important happened in the United States. The United States Supreme Court ruled in Miller versus Jackson that having juveniles serve a mandatory life sentence without parole violated the Eighth Amendment. Hmm. According to the website, www.sentencingproject.org, Justice Kagan emphasized that judges must be able to consider characteristics of juvenile defendants in order to issue a fair and individualized sentence. Adolescence is marked by transient rashness, proclivity for risk, and inability to assess consequences, all factors that should mitigate the punishment received by juvenile defendants, which I agree. They don't have the idea to make decisions, okay? With that in mind, the prosecution offers a deal. There would be no trial. They would change the charge to murder in the second degree as well as armed criminal action, which would carry with it a 10 to 30 year sentence or life imprisonment with the chance of parole. Now, of course, they jump at that plea deal and they take it. With the laws in Missouri, that means Alyssa will serve 35 years and 5 months before she will be eligible for parole. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Alyssa's defense team illustrated that Alyssa's fragile mental health as well as her tough upbringing, they listed all this as reasons in which her sentence should be lenient. Psychologists took the stand and testified that Alyssa was psychologically damaged and severely emotionally disturbed. They said that Alyssa suffered from major depression, which was illustrated.
Mm-hmm.
But she also displayed symptoms of borderline personality disorder. Now, that's characterized by feelings of emptiness, instability of moods, inappropriate displays of anger, and poor impulse control. They discussed Alyssa's suicide attempts, as well as her self-harm, citing that Alyssa had over 300 scars on her body due to cutting and cigarette burns.
That makes me so sad. I don't understand the whole cutting and burning thing. And when I think that happens, I just feel like this big pit of despair, the emptiness that the person is going through. It's just, yeah, it's horrible.
It's horrible. At this time, the prosecution was still demanding a harsh sentence. They were pushing for a life sentence. They didn't want her to have any chance of parole. Emotions were obviously running high. As the prosecution was going over the details of the crime, Alyssa's grandparents marched out of the courtroom, unable to hear such graphic details. They weren't the only ones. When the judge announced that he would have sentencing ready the following day, Elizabeth's grandmother screamed out, "I think Alyssa should get out of jail the same day Elizabeth gets out of the grave." How sad is that? That's terrible. It's terrible.
Well,
I agree. I get it. Yeah. Like this little baby girl. I get it.
I know.
On February 8th, 2012, the sentencing was set. Alyssa, who was at the time of sentencing, now 18 years old, addressed the court by saying, "I know words can never be enough, and they can never adequately describe how horribly I feel for all of this. If I could give my life to get her back, I would. I'm sorry." Alyssa Bustamante was sentenced to life in prison with the possibility of parole.
Do you really think she was sorry, though?
No, I think she was sick. Following Alyssa's conviction, Elizabeth's mother, Patricia Price, filed a wrongful death lawsuit against Alyssa Bustamante's grandparents and siblings. She was awarded $400,000 in a settlement. She also sued Alyssa herself to ensure that the killer teen could not profit from her crime, meaning no books, no movies, uh-huh, no writings, no nothing. In 2017, a settlement was reached to the tune of $5 million,
in which
Alyssa would be required to pay the mother of Elizabeth, as well as to inform her, the mother, meaning Elizabeth's mom, if Alyssa would receive any compensation arising from publicity around the case.
That's never going to get paid off.
In 2014, Alyssa's attorneys filed a motion within the court. They wanted to change the plea that Alyssa had agreed to take in 2012. Alyssa Bustamante testified that she would have never have agreed to plead guilty if she had known about the pending U.S. Supreme Court case involving juvenile murder defendants. And if you go back to what I said earlier, She had plead out in January of 2012, when October of 2012, it stated that juvenile defendants could not get a life sentence without the possibility of parole. They had to have the possibility of parole. And the idea was here is if she would have known that, she would have not taken that plea with the hopes to get less than what she got. Does that make sense?
Yes.
The motion was denied and Alyssa remains in prison today. Now, there is still a chance that Alyssa will be released on parole one day. She will be eligible for parole.
Well, I would think so, since her crime was child, right?
It is, but it's still gruesome, and she was charged as an adult. It would have been better for her to be charged as a juvenile, obviously.
Correct, and then she probably would have gotten out by the time she was 25.
Yeah, and it probably would have been better for her not to plea out at that time because, I mean, you know, the system, who knows? Right. But she'd probably serve maybe, what, 30 years?
Right.
And then be out versus now it's life with the possibility. Yeah, so that's it. I think the thing on this was the video. Like I said, the tour guide at the Missouri State Pen mentioned this, and I was like, oh. And he had mentioned how awful having her little brothers touch the electric fence and how she, you know, giggled with delight. And I get that. Like, kids, you do that. And I have some kids that I grew up with that would have totally done that to me. So I don't necessarily think that's so wrong, but I think when you take it into consideration with this, I mean, I just don't think there's a lot of 15-year-olds out there that would slit a 9-year-old's throat. I just don't think that's just not going to happen.
No.
Purely to see how it felt. That's all this was. She wasn't mad. She wasn't mean. She didn't have a vendetta against this little girl or anybody else. She legitimately wanted to know what it felt like.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. I knew that case. For some reason, I never put it together that it was so close to us. Like, what, 3-2 hours?
Very close. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff City.
Unreal. Just unreal. So, that was good. Good job. What have you been doing during this?
Watching TV. That's all I did. Watch TV and then research the stuff. I wrote a case because I was like, I want something different. I want something new. So, and it's coming up. I plugged into the Google machine. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever happened to, and then that I to see what happened. And then I was like, huh, whatever happened to the girls? And then I was like, huh, whatever happened to the boys? And then I saw it and I was like, oh my God. And then that sent me down the rabbit hole. And that it has the case that I think I'm like 8 pages in and nowhere near done.
Oh, awesome.
So yeah, whatever happened to the boys, .. So that and watching lots and lots and lots of TV.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of your thing. You like to do
hiking,
TV.
Hiking. We, thank God, hiking with my daughter. Cleaned the bathroom last night. That was exciting.
Awesome. Yep. Well, let's see. I've been listening to The Escape from Virtual Island, which is Paul Rudd's comedy series on Audible.
Ooh.
Very funny. I love it.
I love Paul Rudd.
And Jack McBrayer, he's in there. Love him. He's so damn funny. So darn funny. Us, of course, plugging away at my Best Fiends. Getting up.
Let me tell you right now, the Best Fiends thing, that's all I do. So when I'm watching TV, I play Best Fiends.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I also, with my hikes with my daughter, let me just say on Audible, I finished... Speaking of which, perfect follow-up to this case, No Choir Boy by Susan Coughlin. And it's about boys, teenagers, that were sentenced to death. Very, very fascinating. And then also the two that I got going on right now is Where the Crawdads Sings by Delia Owens.
Mm-hmm.
Halfway through there. I'm hoping Tate doesn't disappoint me. And then also The Case That Haunts Us by John Douglas, which is pretty darn good. So that's and that's all Audible. Audible,
go Audible. Yeah, thank God for Audible. Another thing I've been doing, I've been watching more makeup videos, and just funny videos on YouTube. I never watch videos on YouTube at all. But my favorite YouTuber video guru is Jamie French, J-A-I-M-E French. Google her. She's pretty much the equivalent of us. She's like, she's not afraid to speak her mind. Like, if she hates something, she will tell you she does not like it. You know, she's not paid to, like, people will send her, like, those really expensive palettes that all these influencers are raving about. If she doesn't like it, she's going to tell you, you know, don't, I didn't like it. You might like it, but I don't like it. And she's also really funny. Like,
she is funny.
She
very funny.
Doesn't take herself seriously whatsoever, which I love. I appreciate that in a good influencer.
But where's she from?
She's from here.
She from the Loo.
She's from the Loo. Woo! That's probably why she's so cool. But anyway, she's great. But anyway, otherwise, that's it for us. We love you. Please, 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 please tune in to GetVokal.com, GETVOKL, or download the app and watch us on Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. Other true crimes going to be Lainey from True Crime Fan Club, War Baby from Murderous Minors. I absolutely love her. She's a doll. Love Lainey too. Charlie from Crime Lines is on there. I think Tim and Lance from Crawl Space is going to be on there now. Robin from The Trail Went Cold. There
I
you
love
go.
It. Mm-hmm. And don't we have a fabuloso promo that you wanted to promo before we...
We do. Thank you for reminding me. Our promo, which is right after this and right before the bloopers, I'm sure there's going to be bloopers, is from our really good friends, Mac and Olivia from Death by Champagne.
Which are located...
in St. Louis!
Woo! Yay! It's a St. Louis kind of show.
Actually, Mac is my daughter, my youngest daughter's aerial arts teacher. And she's
super
amazing.
Adorable. She is adorable.
So is Olivia. They both are.
Well, no, they both are. I'm just saying.
Super cute. Yep. And I think you guys will really like them. So give their promo a listen and give them a shot, too. I think you'll like them.
I think so, too, Jen.
Yeah.
I think so, too. Anywho, any questions, comments, make sure you guys hit us up. Hit us up on Twitter, Facebook. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com, all that good stuff. But guess what? Until then, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya.
Today's episode was researched and written by me, Cam. For more information about this episode, as well as all the sources I used, please check out our show notes or the podcast website at ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Our True Crime Podcast is developed and created by hosts Jen and Cam. Original music and audio mix of all our True Crime Podcast episodes is courtesy of Nico Vertese from We Talk of Dreams. Listener discretion is provided by Edward October from October Pod VHS. Our True Crime Podcast is executive produced by Nico Vertese and Dick Vane. Make sure to like and subscribe to Our True Crime Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. We can be reached on Instagram and Facebook at Our True Crime Podcast or on Twitter at Our True Crime Pod. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you really like the show, make sure to check out our Patreon at Our True Crime Podcast. Our True Crime Podcast is an OTC production.
I'm scrolling. My lips are so chapped.
I'll hand you, I'll let you listen to all the people that call in and say, that's not how you pronounce it. It's called this. It's called Herman. I know it's pronounced P-R-I-E-S-S, but it's called Herman. The P-R-E-I-S-S is silent.
Patty Priest. Priest? Price. What did I just say? I'm going to go Price. Whatever. Just remind me later. Or I'll go back to Patty. Here we go. Sorry, Nico.
Or just do Priest.
Priest. The visitor is six.
Speak to the woods. Do you remember that?
No, because I'm normal. No, I'm just kidding.
You don't remember that?
I'm just joking.
The obscene phone calls I kept getting?
Oh. Ew.
In high school?
Ew. I totally forgot about that. I forgot about that phrase.
Speak to the woods or talk to the woods. Talk to the woods.
What does that even mean?
No idea. Hmm. No idea, but they kept calling forever.
bigger than an animal ditch, right?
I know. You just said hole like 25 times, and it just made me giggle.
I'm sorry. You want me to say it again? Should I say it again?
there's a hole in the bottom.
Well, there's also holes in her house because she's a whole hot mess.
No.
All right. Was that better about the holes?
Yeah.
I like holes.
It's a hole. It's a hole. There's a hole. And there's another hole. And don't forget that one hole, that and then that other hole.
How many times can you say that, right? Because I'm saving the big word for later. Okay, here we go. Maybe Elizabeth wasn't the first intended victim.
But victim? It wasn't the victim?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want maybe no victim.
Adolescence is marked by transient rashness, proclivity for risk, and inability to assess consequence. I'm so proud of myself with those big words.
It's a big consequences.
Oh, Jesus. When the judge announced that he would have sentencing ready.
Deep breaths.
When the judge announced that he would have sentencing. Why do I keep sentencing? How come I can't say that?
Jesus.
Come over there and punch you.
I didn't say anything. I'm just stating my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of anybody else. Next time I'll have my phone up and I'll let you know.
Robin,
yes, from the Trail Went Cold. Killed. Robin from the Trail Went Cold.
Yeah. Stream and Kid.
Hey, listeners, if you're tuning into this show, one, you have good taste, and two, you might enjoy another show that we host called Death by Champagne, the podcast here to keep you up at night. I'm Mackenzie.
And I'm Olivia.
We have topics in all realms, from the reality of true crime to the depths of the occult. We have dozens of episodes to binge that range from hair-raising scares to infuriating miscarriages of justice.
We've covered everything from the origins of Satan to the crimes of an unidentified serial killer in our hometown of St. Louis. Other episodes include tales of unsolved mysteries, murder investigations, disappearances, cold cases, hauntings, folklore, and people in history that are stranger than fiction.
In Season 3, you can join us for a true crime book club, giving in-depth coverage on cases living in the darkest corners of our bookshelves. Our first multi-part series is on the crimes of Gary Ridgway, focusing on his family, victims, and survivors.
So grab your cat keychain, surround yourself in a salt circle, lock your doors, and unlock that phone.
Hail Satan.
And pop some bottles.